Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law on the subject of litigation. My name is Martin Marks, and I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone, in no uncertain terms, that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or even member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, our advice to you would be, well, get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of entertainment, surely a little bit of education out of it. But mainly, you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However thoughtful and experienced as these opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just that, just people's opinions. And it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, so on to the next subject. If I can take everybody to the homepage of Your Remedy, www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. There's a separate page that comes up with just two items on it. Both of these items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American Jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default, mostly known for its national 85 to 90% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly required for anyway. But not really why it's up here. The reason we've got it up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course a couple times, and then you get into the common law default, you'll see very quickly that it acts as essentially a real-life homework assignment. Most of the key pillars, structure of the jurisdictionary, you're now acting out in a real-life scenario with the common law default. And so that coupled with such a high win rate, folks find it a little more palatable to have that be their first go-around. Not to mention traffic scenarios are usually a lot less stressful given the fact that if a mistake is made or it doesn't go exactly according to plan, more often than not, it's just a basic traffic scenario. We're not looking at a big to-do of that. So, but both these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary at $250 and just a very small contribution of $150 for that common law default. And so we encourage you to pick both of those items up at your earliest convenience. All right, so if we back out of that, now we're back to the homepage of Your Remedies in the Law. We see that log in and register. That prompts us to remind you to set yourself up with an online account there at Your Remedies in the Law if you've not done so already. Also very affordably priced. Full membership is just $10 a month. That can be done automatically through the credit card or PayPal, whatever you like to do. That's going to give us full access to the website, all the wonderful features there. Got a pretty extensive e-book library as well. course, you'll get the phone number and the PIN to every single call. And so when you have the questions and answers portion, that gives you virtually almost unlimited interaction with the speaker, the information provider for that evening, which is pretty neat. And then, of course, every call is recorded, so you've got years of archives, a vast wealth of knowledge available there at your fingertips, and many other wonderful features as well. Now, if this is not an option for you just yet, we do recommend then Freedoms Radio, www.freedomsradio.com, where every evening the calls are broadcast live. And, of course, there's never a cost to use Freedoms Radio. Now, you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would by having the actual phone number and PIN, but there's even a little question bar where you can type in a question or a comment, click submit, that pops up on our end, and we read that out of the air. So you don't get that virtually unlimited with the info provider like you would by having the phone number and the PIN, but you have still some basic interaction. Of course, you'll never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, on to the next subject. Most of you probably notice now that map of the United States that's on virtually every website that we have. That's Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. It's essentially a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topic of discussion. Essentially how it works is this. You've got a very easy-to-use setup wizard. I put your name in here, click next, sort of thing. Then at some point in the middle, it's going to give you a list of topics. Of course, you can choose multiple topics if you like, what your interests are. These range anything from status change to IRS matters to home foreclosure prevention to asset protection, health rights, veterans' rights, on and on. If you can think of it, you'll find it in that list. Then towards the end, it's going to ask you to choose a radius. How far out are we looking to go? Is it going to be citywide, countywide, statewide, so on and so forth? And when it's all said and done, it puts it together much how a lot of folks would probably describe a social media, but really nothing like a social media. It's very custom, very private, but how a lot of folks would describe that. The idea is to put the power of communication, the power of education back in the hands of the common man. The idea is that you're, you know, maybe sitting there one night, you say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first few people jump on there and say, well, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. I don't, you know, that's what's wrong with this country, and so on and so forth. Those might be accurate statements, but I don't know how well that's going to help you in your education. Maybe the next person pops in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse. If you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. Free of the taxpayer. But I'd check that out, and I'd look up these terms and definitions. That'd give me a really good start of what to expect here. Also, I'd maybe watch this YouTube video. Well, now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe a few folks down the road, somebody else pops in and says, well, what that gentleman was saying about the YouTube, that's a phenomenal idea. Also, I'd check out this website. Maybe yourremediesinthelaw.com. And I'd check out this particular educational process. Now you see where I'm going with this. And so once we put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man, and now you've learned to handle your own affairs, your own matters, you're doing your own due diligence, well, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to get folks to do is just simply start talking again. Also, a lot of you probably notice now every time you visit the homepage of your remedies in the law, you're met with that little blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on or stay. We've done that so simply so folks will explore. too often we hear, oh, I wish I'd known about this, or I wish I'd heard about that before. And we put that up there to encourage folks, look, there's quite a bit there. Your remedy has grown considerably in size over the last 5 years, at least. A lot of new information providers, of course, the same material there from before as well. And now with everything that's encompassed within your remedy, well, your remedy is just one of 2-3 dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So chances are for most of you, there's probably quite a bit that you missed that you haven't seen yet. And so we just encourage you to check all that out at your earliest convenience. All right, also want to remind everybody that we have a question about whether we might have an information provider that can assist them with their particular scenario, their situation. You can reach out to us directly. You can email me, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. You can always call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Somebody will usually be back with you very shortly. All right, winding down here, this next portion we call your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider, if you come aboard with an information provider here at your remedy, particular educational process, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with that information provider. Now, these info providers pay for advertising at your remedy. That would be a cost or an expense to them, along with any other costs or expenses associated with your particular educational process or whatever your endeavor might be. So if there a question arose of a credit or a refund, what's the credit policy like? What's the refund policy like at your remedy? Well, there is none. All sales are final on anything like ebooks, things like that. And then as far as an info provider, if that was a question that needed to arise, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. Even then, those are few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. As always, again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you ever commit to any information provider's time or educational process. All right. All right, well, lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always keep it civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we all get to learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. I do see that we've already been joined by our speaker for this evening. So I'm very excited, and it's my great pleasure to present to you our speaker for this evening, Brother John.
Well, thank you for your very kind and gracious introduction, Martin and Michael. Thank you. Tonight's topic is 8 U.S.C. 1502. And to that end, we talked about last week that we were going to continue on with the Certificate of Nationality issued by the Secretary of State for a person that's not a naturalized citizen of the United States for use in proceedings of foreign state. Okay. Michael, I'm going to ask you for a little bit of participation again for here for a moment. Reviewing Seward's Folly, I mean the acquisition of Alaska, what was the definition of a foreign state that was made in the documentation for one of the most recent states that joined the Union?
Okay, give me 1 second.
While he's looking at that, you have to remember when we're acquiring an additional territory or land that there's some very significant protocols that must be followed. And one of them is that the relationship in the documentation and how we discuss that has to be absolutely accurate, poignantly accurate. There can be no exceptions to that rule. And there's, along with when a state is bought in the union, there's something called an enabling act that defines how that state is bought into the union. And it's kind of interesting that the Enabling Act that brings Texas into the union, both times, because Texas was not just a territory, but it was its own, not just state, but its own country before it joined this country, it was allowed to, it is allowed to, per the Enablement Act, to leave at any time without giving any notice or reason for doing so. It's free to part and depart. And the portion of the Constitution that specifically states and makes definition about no state can be broken down or divided to subdivided so that to provide for an additional state, nor can territories be taken from one state or another without the consent of the state, which requires, in that case, 3/4 approval. But Alaska, when they were going through all the protocols, it was necessary for them to define what the other states were and the definition and how it related to Alaska. Go ahead, Michael.
All right. So when a state court in Alaska needed a federal judge to handle a case overload, the Congress amended 28 U.S.C. 297B, bravo, to make that possible. In its reference to the 50 states, the statute is titled 2013 U.S. Code Title 28, Judiciary and Judicial Procedure, Part 1, Organization of Courts, Sections 1 through 482, Chapter 13, Assignment of Judges to Other Courts, Sections 291 through 297, Section 297 specifically said, assignment of judges to courts of the freely associated compact states. Then, the Congress refers to these freely associated compact states as countries in subsection B, bravo, quote, the Congress consents to the acceptance and retention by any judge so authorized of reimbursement from the countries referred to in subsection A, end quote.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Tonight is class participation night. And along with that, many of you, I'm hoping at least some of you did some homework that was assigned last week, and for sharing with the others, with all of us others. And remember, in Americans Restoring Liberty to America, we all stand beside each other. I have the honor and the privilege of standing beside each one of you. I am not higher. I am hoping I'm not lower. At least my typical macho American male ego would like to believe I'm not too much lower. I know sometimes I qualify being the bottom of the barrel, and I've been accused of even worse than that, you know. But, if you start casting aspersions and calling me names, try to take it easy on my typical macho American male ego. You know, leave something for me to, you know, hold some substance to. But at this juncture, the several states are referred to as foreign countries or foreign states. And at this juncture, 8 U.S.C. 1502, the certificate of nationality issued by the Secretary of State for a person not a naturalized citizen, and we have quite a few naturalized citizens on this call tonight, and especially one precious sweetie up in upstate New York there. What happens is that for an American national And I don't know how many of you contacted Michael and got the handouts for last week's class. If you did not get the handout, which included not just 8 U.S.C. 1502, but also a copy of the Constitution that had some highlights on it. If you didn't get those handouts last week, text or email Michael right now, and he will forward those when he's able to. In the meantime, when Alaska was bought in to the Union, it recognized all of the states, other states, as foreign states. Or countries individual, not just the Texas country, but everyone, even Washington, Idaho, Delaware, they were all recognized as individual countries. Okay. At this juncture, the certificate of nationality, and I'm going to read 8 U.S.C. 1502, the Secretary of State is authorized to issue in his discretion in accordance with the rules and regulations prescribed of all people by him a certificate of nationality for any person not a naturalized citizen of the United States who presents satisfactory evidence that he is an American national and that such certificate is needed for use in judicial or administrative proceedings in a foreign state. And in this case, while the documentation for Alaska indicated that the other states were countries, each state of the Union is different than the state with which you may domicile in. So what happens is that technically the other 49 states are foreign states. Such certificate shall be solely for the use in the case in which it was issued and transmitted by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state in which it is to be used. So how many of you did your homework this last week and reached out to the Secretary of State or the Department of State to find out what the requirements were for you personally and then just in general to get a certificate of nationality issued? At this time, if you would raise your hands so that Michael or Martin can unmute you. One point a little while, we may open it up for group discussion, at which point we'll unmute everyone at the same time. But when we do that, we ask humbly, respectfully that you be considered for your fellow person. Okay, Michael or Martin, does anybody have their hand raised that they did they contacted the State Department?
Yes. Yep. Let's see there. We've got Jennifer. You go ahead and get her unmuted.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Jennifer from New York. Go ahead.
Hi. I did call the number you gave, and the woman did a lot of researching while I was on the phone and said, we only deal with passports at the end. We don't have anything to do with that. And so then she gave me another phone number to call, said it was the USCIS department, and I'd already had a letter from them saying because I wasn't a U.S. citizen, I had no standing to FOIA a request from them. And so I have been working on a letter that I was going to write directly to the State Department and see what that does for me.
Okay. Jennifer is one of the individuals that I indicated that when I indicated that we have some naturalized citizens, She's one of them. And so this task was monumentally harder for her to seek. I did not expect her to get it this far, but this is very, very good. Okay, can you restate that last sentence, Jennifer?
I'm in the process of writing a letter to the Department of State and pointing out, you know, 1502, and asking them to send a certificate of nationality to actually a number of places, and to also send a copy to me as well, because the USCIS said I didn't have, because I'm not a U.S. citizen, I had no standing to use the FOIA system.
You are actually a U.S. citizen. You're naturalized. You're not a natural citizen, but you're still
right.
A citizen. You know, you still have citizenship, and very specifically, there's multiple statutes that say even an American national has status and owing allegiance to not just the state in which they domicile, but also to the U.S. government, and falls under the protection of that, of not just the state in which they domicile, but also they fall under the protection of the U.S. government. So technically, they are required by statute to protect and care for you. And so at this juncture, I'm hoping that because in my research, my minuscule little bit of research, I'm finding out that a naturalized citizen technically under the preamble for this statute qualifies for that same protection and that same service. So presently, while I haven't finished researching that out to its nth degree, I have high hopes for Jennifer to be able to get a certificate of nationality. And remember what she said, the second to last sentence she said. And she's asking him to send it out to a number of different individuals. They're actually almost all judiciary and municipal offices. And she's asking for a courtesy copy for herself so that she knows what they receive. Okay? And that's the way you get a copy for your file. Okay? Thank you, Jennifer. That was, you're $1 million. I love you dearly. You kill me. Oh, Santa, you just slay me. Okay. Do we have anybody else with their hand up, Martin or Michael, that did the homework on the Certificate of Nationality?
No, I believe it was just Jennifer.
Say it again. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I believe that was just Ms. Jennifer.
Just Jennifer, okay.
We got another pop-up here. I have another one. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, I called the number. I ran into a roadblock. I didn't get the lady's name. I should have got her name. And she ran me around, tried to run me around the circle. And I said, well, have you read 8 U.S.C. 1502 or U.S.C. 8 U.S.C. 1101? I just started reading off codes. And I said, have you even read any part of the Constitution? She started getting a little snotty. So, and she kept referring me back to the State Department, to their website, and I don't have a computer. So I ended that conversation, and the next time I called, I got John on the phone, and he was much more helpful, and he actually tried to steer me in the right direction. I told him what I wanted, and he was trying to be as helpful as he could. So it just all depends on who you get and how you handle them. But the first thing you need to do is get their name, because if you don't get their name, you're just, you know, whenever you go to complain to anybody, you don't even have a name to bring up. But it's going to be a chore because they're indoctrinated. This is how we do this, and that's all they know. It's like anything else you do, county, state, municipal, it doesn't matter, school board. They're indoctrinated to this is the way we do it. Here's our schedule, our book. Here's our course. This is what we do, and that's all they know. They don't know anything else. So it's you can get upset and get nowhere, or you can start to try to educate them.
Very
but
good.
I'll continue on, though.
Please. You know, this education, let's make a stipulation for the next till we hit the January January 1st on all the classes. I'm going to make a point of finding out if all of you, if you've had a chance to do any further search and research in 8 U.S.C. 1502. Now, did you notice that he made a very, very poignant issue about getting their name? That's extremely important. That's almost a moment of endearment when you expect, in addition to the fact that you have somebody to refer back to complain about, but when you say, when they say, this is Department of State, this is, my name is Bill, who am I speaking with? You know, how can I help you? Say, well, State Department Bill, this is Customer John. How you doing today, Bill? You know, and, open dialogue with a pleasant, with a moment of pleasantry and, you know, just, and say, how's your day been so far? You know, and, or have you had a hard day at the rock farm or whatever, you know? But start out with a pleasantry and just say, Bill, I think I may have a toughie, but I need some information regarding some State Department activities. Is this something you can help me with? And, you know, that way you've brought them on board. You gave them a chance to come on board and of their own volition sign on. And then after they've signed on, then, you know, like he was pointing out very, very carefully, then go ahead and ask them about the 8 U.S.C. 1502. You say, have you ever had to deal with this, or is this something you can help me with? And a lot of the times what's going to happen is they're going to say, you know what, I haven't even heard of this statute before. And then you say, I tell you what, if I was quiet for a moment, would you like a moment to just quick look it up, do a search on 8 U.S.C. 1502 on your internal computers there, and give them a chance to dig out what they might have and what they might be working forward and toward on this. And there's a handful of things that right now, and I'll be honest and straightforward with all of you. I'm using you as my crash test dummies. I mean my paralegals. I mean my research team. Did he say crash test dummy? I'm certain his lips are moving. What I'm doing here is that there is a handful of information that currently is not coherent with some of the information that I've already received, that I've been working on, and that I'm studying I would like to get as much help from you, all of you, to sort out and bring some level of coherence the difference between the statutes and their policy. And I've been quoted a couple of policy memos now that are not in concert with the statutes. So what I would like to do is, if I can endure all of your help and assistance for the mutual benefit of all of us that are on this call tonight, and all those that that we might have the option and opportunity to assist in the future, that I would like to find out as much of the variety of information that we're getting. And if you make the same phone call and you dial the same number and you get the same response, that is important to me, that that you're getting the same response that two other people got, but the other two didn't get that. And I'm trying to figure out what type of educational program and what I'm going to have to put it in the form of, because I may have to put something up on a web where I ask somebody at the State Department, could you look this up at state.us.state.info, which doesn't exist yet. With that particular URL, I was working on securing that right now as a .info. But if it looks as much as possible like something that they might have, I might have the capacity to put a candid brief up there to be able to educate them in their own statutes, you know. And if we can boil it down so that it's candid, succinct, and extremely accurate, I'm finding out that whether it's a traffic ticket for a red light camera, or, you know, a DUI, or wrongful carry of a firearm, or you know, whatever, or a Treasury Department or IRS case, income tax, etc., whether that's state like California, the 540, or the U.S., which is 1040, there's a lot of the statutes that affect an individual differently when their status is clearly defined in the computer as an American national. And to that end, being able to connect the dots for those different agencies in the alphabet soup group, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the three-letter fun factor agencies, you know, et cetera. If we can come up with a simple way to educate them, and this is what I'm working, one of the things I'm working on right now, that if you all, every one of you can help assist, and you know, if you have 20 minutes left over from lunch before you have to go back to the rock farm, I mean the office, or the welding shop or the bakery or whatever it is, and you can, you know, just do some quick research, or maybe even call the State Department. Now, the State Department calls, unless you call in the morning, expect long hold times. The earlier in the day you call, the shorter the hold times. The four calls that I made today to the State Department, two on this subject, two on unrelated, two different subjects, I had less than a 1 minute wait time. Now, I made all those calls before 9:30 this morning, but I had less than a 1 minute wait time. Now, the one call I made this afternoon at about 3:30, 4 o'clock time frame, I had on hold in one ear, and it never, ever, ever, they never took me off a hold. They never actually answered me. And while I was using multiple phones, that one was never, ever answered. That it went all the way till they they end up hanging up because they close. So so what's happening is that I need and I'm begging every single one of your efforts and your grace to help assist with the this research project to help out every one of us on the 8 USC 1502 there. So now do we have now did you have anything else to share?
Are you asking me, John, Mike?
Yes. I was just wondering or was that pretty much the sum total of how much fun you actually had?
Well, the second go around after the first one, I reevaluated everything before I decided, and then I got the name first. And he was actually helpful. He was saying, "I'll be back in a minute. Give me a minute. I'm going to check on this." And he's on his computer, and so he was real helpful. So it just depends on how you approach them and what you approach them with. And like you say, stroke them a little bit and then start asking. You know, it's all in how you approach them and how their day. You don't know how their day's going. You're not in their shoes. And believe me,
right.
I've had people on the job come up to me and I'll take my shirt off and give it to them. And the next day, I might just try to throw them off the building. So it just depends on how your day's going. So you're right.
Yeah, really.
I
will put you in a trunk, and then I will have help people try to find you.
But,
yeah.
You get more with honey than you do with vinegar.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Martin, do we have anybody else that has their hand up right now?
All right, let me step in here. Martin had a little problem with his phone dropping. Just give me 1 second
okay.
for it to load.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, so that was Mike, and Martin's back. Okay, welcome back, Martin. Let's check Freedoms Radio. Would you do that real quick?
Absolutely.
Anyone else have questions, press star 2 on your keypad while Martin's checking Freedoms Radio.
Freedoms Radio is clear.
Okay. Brother John, anything else you want to talk about tonight?
Okay.
How about as the stomach turns?
That's where we're going.
Okay.
Okay. This is now back to America's favorite daytime soap opera, As the Stomach Turns. The saga of Mr. T and how much fun he could really have. And now, talk about having way too much fun. We have a recorded conversation where an individual was saying that, the rights that you're talking about don't exist. And he's saying, you know, you're misquoting the Constitution. And he was saying this individual, Mr. T, was literally quoting the Constitution word for word. And the guy says, no, you're dead wrong. That is not, absolutely not what the Constitution says. And Mr. T is trying to make a few points right now. One of them is that regarding the American National. And to that end, we're having to figure out how to take a justice that is very hard-nosed, very heavily ingrained. We're trying to take a public defender that is very hard-nosed and very heavily ingrained in the system and the way things have been and educate them. It almost seems, if I was to believe, if I was to actually believe that any task was truly insurmountable, I might begin to consider this one of those tasks. But that's not true. Everything has a solution. Everything has an answer. Everything has a way to fix it. Everything does. There's nothing that's not fixable. The Most High King makes that to happen. And so to that end, how much fun can you really have? We're trying to see if we can use an 8 U.S.C. 1502 letter from the State Department to shock both the public defender and the judge and the prosecutor. So we're digging through some things. Coincidentally, a sidebar point of humor, Mr. T asked for the assistance of counsel under the Sixth Amendment. He indicated a name that was not on the list of any bar or a current practicing member of any bar, and doesn't even call himself an attorney, although he has a law degree and stuff like that. But the public defender said that there's no way the judge is going to allow that because he says, well, the Constitution says that I can have my counsel beside me for assistance. He says, I don't want them representing me. I want to appear sui juris. And as a matter of fact, I'd like you to assist me. And you use the word standby counsel, wherever you want to use, but I want this man and you to assist me. He says, well, it's never going to fly before the judge. And he says, the Constitution clearly states under the Sixth Amendment, and he says, you're not quoting, and he quoted it literally word for word. And I don't know whether he was reading it or just quoting it from memory, but he hit it word for word. And this public defender said, literally jumped in Mr. T's rice bowl and started kicking out rice and says, you're misquoting the Constitution. You're making it say something that it doesn't say. The only person that can represent you, represent. That's, that means that somebody else has the right to say what you were going to say. And even if it goes south, you have no recourse. But he says, the Constitution clearly states that it has to be a practicing member of the bar in current good standing. And he says, you're lying, you're misquoting the Constitution. Well, this attorney was lying and misquoting the Constitution. We had a little bit of a funny ha-ha with us today on the conference call with Mr. T, because the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution was ratified on December 15, 1791, and the American Bar Association was founded on August 21, 1878. Okay, did anybody catch that? The Sixth was in 1791. Is everybody listening? And the American Bar Association was founded in 1878. Almost 90 years later after the Sixth Amendment. And there was by 75 lawyers from 20 states, including the District of Columbia. Legal profession that we know today barely existed at the time. Lawyers were generally sole practitioners who trained under the system of apprenticeship back then. And it's actually 87 years later when the Bar Association was founded. So they're saying you have to be the Constitution clearly states you have to be a practicing member in good standing of a local bar. And at this juncture, I one time admittedly was I wasn't always quite the tactful diplomatic citizen that I am now. One time a judge says, "No, I'm sorry, you have to be a member of the bar in good standing for the Constitution." And this is over 40 years ago. And I says, "If I prove you wrong," we were in, you know, you have to understand, we were in court at the time. And it was a full court, and it was a superior court, for the state of California in, downtown LA, just down the street from Parker Center there. So this was right downtown. And, I lived in California at the time. But I says, "Your Honor, if I can prove you wrong, would you, take off your robe and retire right now? And if I cannot prove you wrong, then I'll spend a month in your bailiff's jail." He says, "You'll spend a month in my bailiff's jail whether you want to or not, you know?" I says, "Your Honor, I don't think you'll do that because you're trying to live up to the term, Your Honor, and that you still have honor." And he goes, and he says, "But," I says, "if we read the Constitution, you know, the Sixth Amendment," and I quoted the date that the Sixth Amendment was, back then I just said 1791. I didn't say it was December 5th. And I says, "And you can look that up in," and I had one of those big books that had a history on the Bar Association and American Bar, and it was one that he recognized. And he, as I started to open it, he got a cold sweat. He goes, "I tell you what, let's call this one a draw, and I'll let you plead this case for that person." I says, "Your Honor, that is incredibly gracious of you, and I'm honored by your kindness. And I think they're only looking for me to assist them. They choose to represent themselves, jury jurors. Can we go with that? Would that be acceptable, Your Honor?" Because then, and I says, "Because then that'll be in perfect compliance with the Constitution. And would it please the court to be in perfect compliance?" I had a mean tack on my chair. I was ready to say all kinds of other stuff. And the judge says, "Okay, we'll call this one a draw, and you can assist them." And he let it go. I figured myself for at least doing a couple hours, if not a day or two, in the bailiff's jail there. He let me out. And I was young. I was cocky. I had a bad attitude. I was ready to feed this judge to the piranha, and because the press was in the courtroom, and I was ready to feed him to the sharks. That's a big problem lately. It says all these trials are, what is this? Wait a minute. Isn't there something in the Constitution about, in the Sixth Amendment, it says, maybe I'm mistaken, it says something about in all criminal prosecution, the accused should enjoy the right to a speedy and what kind of trial? A public trial. A lot of what's going on right now is not public. And something that I've had to learn very, very carefully is that without that public purview, there are impossible press. And the press wasn't there for the case that I was there for. It was for the case that was coming up right after it. But when I made that challenge, every one of them that had a camera in the courtroom was rolling their camera. Okay? So this judge, on the court of public opinion, tried to, as diplomatically and tactfully as possible, wend his way out of a situation that he realized how bad it really was. A professor that I knew from USC called me up that night, and he was so shocked that I answered the phone. He says, I heard what happened. You realized that there was coverage in the news. I expected you to be in jail somewhere. You know, and he says, I know so-and-so personally. He says, we were at law together at Harvard. And he says, he has never backed down ever like that, ever in his life. And as the previous gentleman that was assisting with the USC 1502, he commented that even stroking the individual, helping them feel good, make sure that they still, I'll add on, make sure they still feel like a real person and a real citizen. I've learned now never to take anybody's dignity away from them and under any circumstances, and definitely not in front of witnesses. If we're doing it correctly and we're educating them correctly, sometimes things may get a little testy until they, you know, if they become too entrenched in their error or their ways. And the thing is that they carry the weight in most of those courtrooms. You don't have an army of U.S. Marshals that are willing to stand alone and say, even if my watch commander breaks the rules, I'll arrest him. Those type are far and few apart. The ones that would walk right through the gate and go up to the judge's bench in spite of the bailiff coming up to try to stop him and cuff him. Those are so far and few apart. If you have that kind of horsepower, sometime you could possibly do that. But you're going to risk a situation where you may have differing law enforcement individuals, i.e. the one that enforces the law in the courtroom, the bailiff, versus city, county, state, or federal agency law enforcement, including alphabet soup like FBI, you know, or DSS or GSS, you know, and there's a whole host of them that could end up on opposite sides. And what do they do when they, each one, I'm not going to use the word knows they're right, but believes they're right, and the other believes the other is breaking the law? Are we going to see a swarry of lead mosquitoes flying around? So it's very important that, like our fellow brother on the call tonight, he made the comment about stroking him and making him feel good and not taking their dignity away. Very, very important. In fact, it's so much more important than the point he made. If we can do that to the point where we win them over and give them dignity, then we've not only just won them over, but we've won an ally and somebody that may go out and help fight the battle with us and for us. To that, my time has come to a close. We're going to open it up for Q&A. At this juncture, you're not required to stay to adhere to the subject matter topic for the evening. We're going to continue to keep 8 U.S.C. 1502 on the burner at least till the end of December. And if any one of you get a chance to interface with the State Department and make some headway, especially those of you who have already corrected your status, and forbid any of you should have something burning, whether it be a traffic ticket or otherwise, please, please, please make a point of, if you can text or notify Michael or Martin in advance, so that we would like to, if you would honor us with the pleasantness of your presence on the call, we would very much appreciate your story, however different or identical it is to any of the others. With that, thank you, and back to you, Martin and Michael.
All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 for any final questions, raise your hand. Star 2. And then if you're listening at freedomsradio.com, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit. All right, Duncan, go ahead.
Hello. I didn't get the telephone number for the State Department to call.
Oh, okay. Grant me a moment's grace. Let me pull that one up here. I got to get my little phone directory out here. The number that I gave out was the customer service general number. Now, okay, it's area code 202-647-6575. Now, what they're going to do is before you get to the department that actually I think that you would end up getting the person that she will ask you for a letter or an email with all the pertinent information, but you'll go through at least 3 phone transfers before you get there. Now, the last time I did it, I had meant to ask, it was my firm intention to ask if they had any direct dial numbers for any of those departments. Only the second transfer I asked, and they says, well, this one, you know, we can only transfer it internally. But after that, I was always ask if there's a direct dial number beyond that. And but right now I want to give you that 202-647-6575.
Thank you. I have it.
Okay, was that everything I could help you with this evening?
Yes, thank you.
Wonderful. Back to you, Martin. Sir.
All right. Thank you so much. And again, star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have any questions. Of course, this is our final questions and answers portion, so when we're done with this, we probably will go ahead and wrap it up. So don't hesitate. Any other final questions? Bruce in Texas, go ahead.
Good evening. So looking through my notes from the other call, I'm not finding the specific question we're supposed to ask them when we get hold of a person at the State Department.
Okay, that's a good question. Okay, the first question you asked is that, after you please always follow the pleasantries. Hello, State Department, it's Chris. I'm customer John. How's your day going? And do the pleasantry question first. And then say,
yep.
I have a question regarding 8 U.S.C. 1502. And the Certificate of Nationality issued by the Secretary of State. And make sure that you put, whether you quote the statute, it's the 8 U.S.C. 1502, say, I have a question regarding the Certificate of Nationality issued by the Secretary of State. And they'll say, I've never heard anything then like that. And I actually had one person today say that he had never heard of that. And I said, 8 U.S.C. 1502. And he says, let me look that up. He says, oh, yes, I actually have heard of this. But ask the question that you start with is that, I'm looking for some information on Certificate of Nationality issued by the Secretary of State. Is this something that you can personally help me with, or is there somebody else that is more qualified I can chat with?
I'm right. Okay.
Great. You keep asking that question through each phone handoff until you get somebody says, oh, yes, I can help you with that. Okay?
Yep. So,
wonderful.
That gives me the exact question, and it's just a matter of working it up through the numbers
the
of people
chain.
So you get somebody that knows about it.
Right, exactly. Thank you for asking, Sandy. I have a question regarding certificate of nationality issued by the Secretary of State. Is that something that you can help me with, or is there somebody that more qualified that can help me? Just ask the question, okay?
Yeah.
And if she says, well, I've never heard of that, say it's under 8 U.S.C. 1502, you know, and sometimes they'll say, hey, wait a minute. Let me look that up, okay? But that's where you start.
Cool. Okay. Thank you.
No, thank you. Okay, back to you, Martin.
All right, go ahead, Jennifer.
Okay, thanks, Martin. John, the constitution that you gave us was
You were breaking up a little bit, Jennifer. Can you start over?
The constitution that I was given was the Constitution of the United States. Is there any way of getting a copy of the Constitution for the United States, and is there a difference if I compare the two?
Jennifer, I've shared this story before. My great grandfather went in D.C. got multiple copies of the Constitution that had the wax seal on them, and I had a couple of those, and when one of the folks at the Library of Congress realized that I had one from way back. I was trying to inquire on how to get more copies of that. They, the year before I got married, she called her supervisor, who called the director, and, he said, could I see that? And I unrolled it. He says, no, hand it to me. I says, no, I'm not letting, go of this. And he says, no, give it to me. And he called the security guards, and I rolled it up, and I slipped it back into my tube and back into my jacket. And they says, what's going on? He says, he's got a document, and explain to him the document is mine. And one of the officers, the security officers there, looked funny and says, is it his? He says, well, yeah, but it's an unauthorized illegal copy. And, I says, not by my grandfather's, I had to explain myself, but it came down to the fact that they would not even, I just need a couple more copies of this with the wax seals on them. They says, we can't do that. You know, and they, I was there for 5.5 hours and didn't get any movement at all. And I didn't realize that my life was being threatened at the time, if I didn't turn over that copy. I didn't. I managed to leave the building, and they followed me, and, the car that I was driving at the time, I had driven out from California, and, I didn't go to it. I ended up getting in a taxi cab and coming and picking my car up the next day. Unskillfully, I kept the copies that I had in a place where when the fire took our house 9 years ago, our residence, they were lost. Finding a copy of the one for versus the one of, and for those of you who don't are unaware of the difference, one of those is for the corporation, the other is for the aggregate. And after 1933, when quote-unquote the U.S. Supposedly declared bankruptcy, the aggregate, and the corporation that was established in 1917 for the purpose of taking over in the place of the aggregate, this was a well-thought-out, long-laid plan. And if you read a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin, and Ed Griffin is still alive to this day. In fact, he and I had a very pleasant conversation yesterday over a very heartbreaking matter, a very heartbreaking matter. A good friend of mine that had been working on some investigations together and some task force that we even reported to the Hill was found. The coroner's report says the charred body was found with cause of death single GSW. The body was found in a closet in the master bedroom that used to be the upstairs before the house burned out. That's something that just happened. And G. Edward Griffin is a personal friend. He's old enough. He's 89 years old. He's only 3 months old, a few months older than my father. And he bounced me on his knee in the 60s, working on the on a presidential campaign together with my father. But if you read that book, it'll fill in a lot of the blanks on why the difference, what the differences are between the Constitution for the corporate versus the Constitution for the aggregate. I do not at the moment have a copy, Jennifer, of the Constitution for the aggregate. I'm sorry.
So I'm certain then you wouldn't find it online anywhere.
I have looked online. Someone told me of a website that had a scanned copy that was physically reduced, that was done at a FedEx Kinko's of an original. And by the time I went to look up the website had been taken down.
Right.
The bad people that do unkind and wrong things are all out there, but no plan of man formed against God can succeed. And some people say, well, doesn't it scare you? The thing that scares me is that if I'm not completely honorable before the Most High King, that scares me.
Right.
There's also an old joke that says, do you want to hear God laugh? Tell him your plans.
Right.
But know what, Jennifer? The moment I have my hands on a copy, I'll get it to you.
Do you think Congress still has an original copy, or do you think they got rid of all of it?
Oh, absolutely they do. But it's not available to the public.
Right.
At least I have not been able to get it. That's another thing for you and everybody on this call. If you're ever at the Library of Congress, ask for that. Ask for the original Constitution. And some people will say, well, this is the same. Any copy that predates 1917 with the Bill of Rights, i.e. the amendments, is the old Constitution for the aggregate. because the corporations were established in
1917. Okay.
That's when the corporation was established. Now, almost nobody knew about that corporation being established at the time. It was in preparation for the event that would be triggered by four families that had invested in the U.S. stock market, at which point that they, back then, only three of the four were billionaires. Only one of the families was multimillionaires. But they had put so much money into the U.S. stock market that they had inflated it and over a 14-year period, and we ended up with the term, does anybody remember the term, Roaring Twenties?
Mm-hmm.
When these guys were artificially propping it up, and they took Winston Churchill aside and said, look, on this date, we're going to crash the U.S. economy. And by crashing their stock market, and it's going to take 3.5 to 4 years, and they're going to file bankruptcy, and they explained to him exactly what they were going to do, and he began to act like an obedient puppy dog, because literally on the day that they told him, they withdrew all of the margin or the value out of all of the major stocks that they had heavily, heavily invested in and propped up, so that the banks didn't even have enough money. When individuals had to go get some out, they withdrew their deposits to the point where the banks had no reserve capital. And you can see if somebody just had a little extra money, how easy it would be to crash the U.S. economy, now, or any economy. Now, since then, there's a lot of banking regulations that have been put in place and some checks and balances that if all of a sudden the liquid capital at the banks in this geographical location or that or all over begins to wane, they have pallets full of fiat or currency, shrink wrapped, that I used to watch them load and unload myself when I worked for an airline at one point, that they are ready to ship around the U.S. or around the world to make up the difference so that someone else can't crash the economy the same way. Only they can. Imagine that. But and it's not a joke. I know three places right now where the pallets are stacked four deep with all different denominations of U.S. currency, in rooms, sub basements that have 18-foot high ceilings, and the forklifts are, you know, if you look at that movie at the end of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they supposedly that pallet is being wheeled by that guy into that storage facility into Never Never Land, where you never land. I've actually seen two places where the sub-basement almost resembled that.
Hmm.
But that's how they manage the currency. There's terms called off-book and on-book currencies, things that you know what? That's information for another evening. Jennifer, if I get my hands on a current copy, or if any of you others on the call tonight get your hands on a current copy, please, we look forward to the honor and the privilege of you sharing. Thank you.
Well, it's so sad about the fire destroying them, and I'm sorry about that. Your loss and help. And thank you for your answer. Have a great night.
Thank you, Jennifer. Back to you, Martin.
All right. Final request for questions, folks. Star 2 on your keypad. Call with us, Star 2. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio, any final questions or comments, type it in the question bar at this time and click submit.
By the way, a side note, for those of you who asked for the Michael sent out the email with the 18 U.S.C. 1502, you'll if you were probably deductive enough to see that that came from the Legal Information Institute. One thing about LOI is that when you see a term with the an underline underneath it, that means that they have a hot source to a hot link to a definition. And like if you click on the word state, in this one, it says the term state, not just excluding what already it means, but in this case, it says it includes the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Virgin Islands of the United States, and the Commonwealth of North Marianas Islands. That link that you would have received, or that document that you would have received from Michael, all of those underlined notes have active hot links in them. You can click on them, and the document, as long as your computer is logged on the internet, those will all pull up, and you can get the definitions and everything it's referring to. Including the term foreign state, it has its own definition there. So just FYI, when we do those type of handouts for the that you can see come from the LOI, those are some positive benefits there. Do we have any other callers tonight, Martin?
Nope, I think that's going to be it for us, Brother John. So we'll bid you a good evening and look forward to seeing you again next week.
Pardon, say it again.
I said, no, that's going to be it for us. We're glad to have you here, and we're going to bid you a good evening, and we'll see you again next week.
Okay, and then, so I'll bid good evening to everyone, and Michael has a short comment about tomorrow's conference call.
Yep. Join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place. We'll be having our normal Wednesday night call with Harris Levin. I'll be discussing the LLCs. And then, of course, Thursday, we've got our normal pre-recorded call with the subject of home foreclosure prevention. And then, of course, Friday, we've got our normal religious call, another one on Saturday. And then, finally, we wrap up the end of the week Saturday evening with Justice Beshears talking about charitable religious trusts, private interest foundations, and the like. So until next time, everyone have a pleasant evening and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.